Hey Danielle, thank you for coming in. You really have an outstanding background. I mean, you're a top student, and then of course you worked with all of these amazing Fortune companies and things like that. And then of course you started and in, got into your own research, and then you have your own great company as well. And you're mining all of that to deliver so much value around the world. So thank you for coming in and sharing your experiences with my audience.
It's a delight to be here. Thank you so much.
So Danielle, you had such a marvelous career, both professionally and also personally, and you're doing remarkable things. But what were those inflection points that made this wonderful person and wonderful career you have today? And this could be something that happened when you were three or five. Could it be within the family, outside the family? Could be something that occurred in a job that you had, or maybe in school. What are those three sort of defining moments in your life that made you who you are today?
I'd say one of the key defining moments was when I very unexpectedly ended up in a city at 21 alone, last minute, and there I was living. So I was recruited for Procter & Gamble in October, but wasn't starting till the following fall. So, 11 months later. And it was by surprise that I had a phone call when they asked for my permanent address in what Toronto. At the time, I was living on the West Coast in Canada. So very different mindset, living at home, had everything mapped out for my life in Vancouver. I picked out where I was going to be living for my a home office, had everything mapped out. And the last minute, like that weekend, I went for an apartment hunting trip when they said, surprise, actually you're here in Toronto. So rapidly, I realized, oh my goodness, I have to move out. Wasn't ready to move out. I had to take control of all my entire situation. I had to find a place to live, find furniture, figure out a new city, all within the confines of being a fresh 21-year-old. I was just out of school and also embarking on a career with a huge portfolio. I was responsible for 45 million in sales for that first role. So that really made me stop and think, oh my goodness, I need to really just get into high gear. There was no time to get settled. There was no time to like figure this out. It was like, voila, you're an adult. There you go, welcome. So that I would say is one of those pivotal moments that truly shaped where I am now. And I mean, I'm grateful that it set me up for a fantastic career, fantastic training, fantastic friendships that I made, especially in that first point, because I was just absorbing everybody and everything around me in this sudden move. So I'm very grateful for that experiences. And I can reflect back that that was a huge shift that maybe not every 21-year-old living on the West Coast today also gets to experience in such a short notice.
That's interesting. Being put into a different environment and having to adapt, and it was a total surprise, really awakened many aspects of adventure and challenge and opportunity all at the same time. And that was a really pivotal, exciting moment for you. Earlier, when you were younger, what were the things that really interested you, like, let's say, in school or in your hobbies and so on?
Yeah. So for me, two things really stood out. One was writing, which now translates into my organization does. And then secondly was dance, and more specifically teaching dance, which also directly correlates to where I am now, what my organization does. So I always had the strong affinity for writing. I loved to write when I was a child. I was writing a novel. I was writing the Great Canadian Novel. I was based in Vancouver, Canada. Writing this dream novel that every 9-year-old wants to dream and write and create. And I was on to page 200, writing it by hand. And that was my dream goal. I was going to be an author. So that was fun, interesting, and just a great imaginative ground to release one's thoughts, to experiment, to ideate, and doing something I just really loved. Like, it was just fun, something I like. But I'm sure many writers out there could probably attest to that lifelong love of writing. And then the second piece, which seems not correlated, but both of these end up correlating, is dance, which led to being on stage, which I love. And then that translated into the teaching aspects of that, which I really love. So even so, I started dance, specifically Polynesian dance, when I was 4 years old, and was exposed not just to Polynesian dance but many types of dance. I felt like I did every type of ethnic dance there was that available to me, which I loved. And even still today, when I see people on stage, I'm like, oh, I want to be there. I want to be doing that. Like just that fun of performing and sharing, and it awakens that interest. Some people don't like it. I'm like, I love that, but I would not know that unless I had that early childhood experience. If you're not exposed to it, you would have no idea. And that love of dance very early set its course on how would I teach this? So I was privileged to have some amazing teachers, some really, really amazing teachers, especially within the field of Polynesian dance. But I was constantly thinking, okay, what would I do different? Like, what would I do? What would I do? I remember being very young and thinking, 12, okay, what would I do different? Well, I do this and this. 13, what would I do? This. 14, what would I do? 15, okay. Then I started putting it into practice. And I was able to start a Polynesian dance studio and actually put those ideas that I had had for so many years into practice. And what I learned from that is a few things. This love of teaching and helping, which carries through my role directly now, this love of trying to grow something, and I hired my other dance students. I look back now, it seems comical now as an adult looking back. By the time, it made so much sense. I remember hiring my 12-year-old dance students to be substitute teachers, and like, of course, they're like 12, they're totally capable. Amazing, amazing women today. So, like, amazing, good choice. But I'm like, oh, of course, I'd hire a 12-year-old. Like, now as an adult looking back, it's like, well, firstly, would I put my own kids in a dance group that a 16-year-old's running? And would they hire other 12-year-olds? But, Stephen, it all worked. It all worked. Everybody was doing what they loved. We had a great structure, a great dance studio, a great community. And I put into place things I loved. I was fortunate that I gave opportunities to all these really young girls and boys for things they could get exposed to. So they could try being on stage and announcing things and just trying out different social skills within a safe space. All of that really translated into this love of teaching and this form of expression being on
Yeah,
stage.
I could definitely see the intersection of creativity and what you're doing now. There's lots of elements of creativity. You're definitely training and teaching. So there's the integration of teaching. There's the interfacing of people and people of all different kind of backgrounds and engaging with them and incentivizing and getting them in the use of the things that you're creating for them. So all of these seeds are there, and it's very entrepreneurial, and you're an entrepreneur. So all of these elements coming together. You went to university, and I understand you were on full scholarship all the way through. So I mean, what was that experience like? What did you learn, and how did you maintain that full scholarship kind of capability at a top university in this country?
It was a very early on, so in terms of that third pivotal moment, was probably this innate driving force to be able to get an education. So a father, a man I admire deeply, was unable to get another career mid-career, similar age to I am now, unable to get that because he didn't have the university credentials at the time. So that became a really driving force myself, being a 9 years old at that time, and then 10 and 11, realizing this importance of education. And without the economic means to achieve that, it becomes onto yourself to drive that. It becomes onto yourself to drive that. So it became imprinted in myself that I want to make an impact on the world. I need an education. I want to get a job. I need an education. I need to have money for an education. I need to get money for an education. So I was very privileged to be able to get scholarships that paid for more than enough to cover me through. And it just fulfilled that inner goal of, like, I need an education. And I'm so fortunate because this really did open so many doors for me that opened up that first door of that surprise, surprise announcement that of where my career was heading me in. But it was a career at a company I admired, at Procter & Gamble, when I started off as it was in business development as an account manager. So a great goal a great achievement for a 21-year-old because I had that education behind me. So it all parlayed very clearly in a very linear path from that third pivotal moment from my childhood.
And also you differentiated because you're a top student. And how do you prove that? Well, you were on a full ride scholarship all the way through, and then you get scouted out of your university because you're a top student to work with one of the top Fortune companies in the world. In fact, it's the number one, consumer products company in the world. I mean, it's just simply remarkable. And you have different transitions, and doing that, you gain a tremendous amount of capability because you're challenged. But then you got into research. So talk about how you transitioned from account manager into heading up research as well.
Yeah. So all throughout my time at Procter and Gamble, while I loved the work, I was in marketing, so I had various marketing leadership roles, heading up big brands, big portfolios within numerous organizations. So heading up Doritos, heading up Old Spice, heading up Olay. Fantastic experience. But what I loved best was taking me back towards those high school days of teaching. What I loved best was developing others. So off the side of my desk, what I ended up doing is I ended up creating training programs for my colleagues on how to sell, on soft skills training and time management. And the organization Procter and Gamble was so generous in their support of me. I became also involved within the training programs within that company. Very, very generous and fantastic breeding ground for future entrepreneurs. When I left my various corporate roles within consumer packaged goods, top companies, Procter and Gamble, PepsiCo, there I had this phenomenal opportunity to lead the one of a leading marketing research and marketing agency to lead up their consumer division. And the work was phenomenal. The work was great. The team was second to none. Second to none. But what kept pulling me back became that theme is that love of teaching, the love of helping others, the love of developing others, that same theme still became that ribbon coming through. So I had the fortunate, good fortune that the organization allowed me to mold my role. So I was able to extend into creating these marketing training conferences. We did some amazing, cool things that you don't get to do with other companies. You just don't get that leeway. Full support on that. That's really became then the fuel for the role that I had at hand. So while I was head of global sales for North and South America, Asia, and Middle East, that wasn't the part that fueled me. The part I really liked was actually this little part here on the side when I was doing training, when I was creating training. So that became an interesting ground for me to test, see what I really liked, see what really stuck.
And then you were unleashed your entrepreneurship side. So can you talk about what made you take that ultimate leap to become an entrepreneur? And you have to really depend on yourself. So an entrepreneur is it's volatile. You have to be agile. You have to have resilience and persistence. You have to take advantage of opportunity. You have to make your own opportunities, and you have to fund this journey. So tell me about your entrepreneurial journey.
Yes, so very interesting, especially from an entrepreneur who's risk averse. So I had learned at an earlier stage for my first company, I had mentioned the dance studio. So that really helped support some of my entrepreneurial testing grounds as I tried out different initiatives, even like how to package the organization to sell to somebody else. Testing, learning how burnout actually happens when you don't separate from real life. Fast forward that to being an entrepreneur, still risk averse, still testing, but with some past experience and the full corporate world, the full corporate experience to carry me. So a funny story that while I was able to test this experience, like many people do, I still was doing a lot of my own, my regular job. I was had the opportunity to work for a large organization to create some learning initiatives for them. And we're embarking along, and I had such a small sliver of time, small sliver of time. You know, I could only work, you know, early mornings, which we could only work with Asia then. Early mornings, you know, evenings, weekends, small slivers of time. One of my organizations said to me, you know, Danielle, I think we got a problem here. I'm like, oh no, okay. You know, maybe it's because I'm only available at evenings, weekends. Maybe I could only do this a little bit. But no, Stephen, their problem was, Danielle, I'm sorry, but because of our fiscal policy, we need to pay you now. I'm so sorry that we need to like have you invoice and pay us now. I'm so sorry it's going to screw up your books. I'm deeply apologize. Like, do you think you can accommodate us? And to get me there all this time, I've been working evenings and weekends, small slivers of time, trying to cram it in while I'm driving, you know, lunch hours, just a chaotic mess of doing NS's two full-time jobs. And that became my window open, because what they were paying me in advance was more than I made in a year anyhow at my regular job. So suddenly it became the no-brainer as to, well, okay, let's go full head into being an entrepreneur. Let's unleash, let go of any of those grips I had about risk averse, and I was doing the numbers and trying to calculate everything. I'm like, for someone who's risk averse, that's a pretty clear sign to just go right in, be an entrepreneur. And I haven't looked back. It's been phenomenal since then, and it's been like 14 years.
So now let's get into the company you have, Beyond the Sky. I mean, what do you do?
Yeah.
What does engagement look like? What do you deliver? And then how has that market changed? But there's a series of questions, but let's talk about this company and
Yeah.
the services you offer.
So pulling from that threads and the strengths from my childhood through to now was always this idea of learning and development, training, corporate training to be specific. So what my organization does, Beyond the Sky Custom Learning, is we provide bespoke training solutions to corporations with a real specialty on professional services, financial services, insurance, energy, and gas. We're really able to help make an impact and actually create effective learning, which might look like onboarding training, mass onboarding. We're specialized in that. It may look like a new system that's being implemented. There's a new system of how to do something. People need to know how to do it, they have a lot of expertise in that. Or it's even parlays into things such as leadership training or difficult conversations or customer service. So it's this realm of custom training that's specific to that organization. The benefits of that, if organizations like it, because it's in the end, it's more cost effective because they own it and it's specific to their company. So it's their own onboarding, their own systems, their own processes. And we've had just such a wonderful experience being able to truly help organizations drive greater efficiencies.
So what does this training look like? I mean, let's say there's company X and they say, we heard about your great work and we talked to, word of mouth is great about what you're doing and we want to engage you. What do you deliver? So you d deliver bespoke, custom, precise, personalized training, but what does that training look like?
Yeah. So often it takes the form of e-learning or other digital learning. Most of our learning solutions are digital. So whether it is specialized videos, whether it's e-learning simulations, most often it takes that digital form, as opposed to like we're not in front of a classroom. I don't talk in front of a class delivering training. The way the world's evolved, the way there's drives the best efficiencies, we create digital solutions for organizations to be able to deploy digitally en masse on scale.
So you're delivering things like videos, online courses that people can work through, which can have maybe exercises in there,
Exactly.
and sort of monitor their progress. You probably have some gamification in there to keep them engaged in some way, incentivized to continue to consume this training. And then if there is any classroom work, the corporation themselves will do the actual frontline training if they wanted to do some kind of a formalized course which
Yeah.
they taught, right?
Yeah. Often the best solutions are of some form of digital components, facilitated components. So my team writes the materials and then the organization can deliver it themselves. Again, drives greater efficiency that way. They own the material. So that's combined with in-person delivery that they do, and then some other form of on-the-job experience. So research is consistently proven that this combination really drives the best performance for an organization from their talent.
So when you're using or when you're creating this digital content and these e-learning courses, are you using some kind of e-learning platform to help house the training, or do the corporations have that, or maybe some combination of the two? And then what other kinds of digitization do you have in there? So when you're creating that training, do you hire developers to help embody that training in a digital form? Like, how does it manifest itself?
So to really drive again those value for organizations, we have custom software that we use to program this software, the e-learning in, and a team of developers, graphic designers, QA, instructional designers to support that. Full team to support that. What in turn that the organizations get the benefit from is they're able to house the courses on their own learning management system. So they control it, they own it. It drives greater cost efficiencies. So we create courses for them to house on their own learning management system, which is fantastic for them.
So you have to be a reasonable sized company then to have your own learning management system, right? So your customers would be quite large then to have that kind of capability. When you're creating these courses, then are you using like Microsoft Copilot, or are you using these kinds of tools to create some of the learning materials?
So the concept of AI is so fascinating, and I actually run an AI plus learning and development community at practice, and I've also joined forces with the Thinking Effect, another top leading organization on AI and learning and development. So when it comes to things like using Copilot, I'll share with you a really interesting example, and all of it falls within the governance structure of those organizations. I can show you though how things which have not yet been developed en masse are playing out. So currently, Stephen, the world is not doing any type of what I want to say level two AI in learning and development. The industry is focused on what I would say is level one, which is doing everything we're doing today, maybe just doing it a bit faster. So I spoke earlier that we create e-learning and videos and facilitator guides for people to deliver in class. With AI right now, organizations are doing that and they're creating it faster. I can create an avatar video with an AI talking head. I can use Copilot and I can create quiz questions faster. Great. Where it becomes more game-changing is level two, where we actually have people interacting with AI. So this is all completely custom coded. And this is a scenario that enables learners to actually integrate and interact with the AI. So in this case, imagine I'm sharing my screen and imagine it's a coaching situation that you want as an employee. You're worried about presenting, and your challenge is to talk to these executives. What we can't do nowadays is create personalized learning at scale, but this does. This does. So imagine that you want to have a meeting, Stephen, with some senior executives. Imagine you're a junior employee. What are the specific behaviors or challenge or characteristics of the challenging stakeholders that you might find the most difficult to manage? Let's conjecture what you would think of. What would you say? What do you want me to put in?
So, what are the specific behaviors or characteristics? So,
Yeah.
the
In
top.
a hypothetical situation where you're worried about going into a meeting with a senior executive.
And managing that conversation with the senior executives.
Yeah, so maybe that's managing their conversation.
Right.
I find the most challenging part of managing them is managing their conversations. So what's happen, then it's asking me, it's completely custom. So what specific behaviors do these challenging stakeholders exhibit that makes them difficult to manage? That's a really good coaching question, actually. So what might you say?
Well, you would have so much experience in this area. So, but you know, there, anytime you're dealing with senior executives, sometimes they don't listen or they have their own agenda. They're not willing to accommodate things that are disruptive, perhaps, or
Yeah.
contrary to their, you know, their institutional IP. And sometimes
Yeah.
they have to be disrupted, right? So.
Right. And what's neat about this training interaction I'm showing you is your whatever we're putting in, it's could be giving you specific feedback to your situation that you're talking about. You mentioned they're not listening. So again, it's asking these amazing coaching questions, and it's asking me, well, how do you handle it when people are not actively listening? So it's unpeeling as you would a human coach. And what's lovely about this particular example, actually, is it's not giving you any advice. So that helps reduce some of those governance issues about something, giving bad advice. It is acting as a your own personal coach, but on scale. So I can type in how I would react, and it's giving me that personalized experience. I can. And what's nice is in a safe space. So as I might not say this to a real human, but I'm like, oh, this is what I'm actually gonna do. But I actually do. I just keep talking. And it continues to parlay there. So this is exciting, this level two of interactions with AI and learning and development, because it doesn't exist today. We have now suddenly the opportunity to offer at scale personalized feedback, personalized coaching is that example I shared. We have other examples where it's scenario-based, difficult conversations, and you get your one-on-one personalized feedback. Like that's really exciting. So each of those, while they're e-learning examples, they could become so much more. And we're just at that precipice right now within learning and development.
Okay, so let me reflect what I just saw, and maybe I misunderstood. So you have a particular challenge in front of you. Your system can prompt a series of questions to iterate, to continually to refine what that challenge means. What are the continuing challenges that you continue to refine? And it'll keep prompting for more particulars. It hasn't been giving me solutions, though. It's just been asking more and more questions to define what my context is and what my specific scenario is. And as it's collecting data, then I'm assuming then you press a button and then it will then deliver the particular kinds of narratives and strategies that'll work in that particular precise personalized use case and create training materials that are aligned with that series of questions where you're building the context. A very personalized, precise context for your particular challenge. And it's automated all of that through this process. Is that what it's doing?
Exactly. So suddenly there's this ability to get this personalized. In this case, we structured this one to be a coach for advice. You can get personalized advice, but at scale. And there's many other use cases that we have that are not coaching related that are also still within the realm of learning and development. But this doesn't exist, which makes it an exciting foray to actually truly help more people.
So when you say at scale, that means that there's 1,000 executives that work in a conglomerate that has 1 million employees, but there's 1,000 executives and they can go through this whole process of these are the areas I'm challenged with. And it keeps asking me finding questions about how I'm challenged with this. And then you could spin off and there's a company like DID, capital D hyphen ID, that can create an avatar. Where you're training it on all of this personalized, precise data you created. And then it'll create an avatar that will act as your personalized coach based on the specific data you fed in. Is that the direction you're going?
Exactly. And more specifically, as ways to DID, we're working on a prototype right now that instead of me typing in that response and hearing the typed from the coach, it would be that avatar speaking it.
Right, and that avatar would then capture what you're saying as well and ingest it into its memory, retain it, and then that would then feed into a customized coach, which which has the ability to free range. So not only precisely trained on all of this sort of interaction that you've done, but then has the ability to articulate even broader context if needed. So it could stay in the lane, but it can go outside the lane if that
Exactly.
person was outside the lane as well. But it
Exactly.
has the underlying foundational training to try to keep it centered in that lane, even if that person and using the coach went outside the lane. Is that
Yeah.
what you're...
Yeah, we've programmed it to be within certain parameters. That one in particular we programmed so it would be asking people a series of reflective questions so they could better crystallize themselves, better themselves, get that enlightenment of where their issue is. It's a coaching process. So we fed it with a coaching process. There's other fun examples though that are a bit more training related in the sense of what one is used to when they think about a training course. Often you take a training course and you're in an e-learning situation, and often there's training about difficult conversations. So this particular model we fed in with the company's policy, as well as what you mentioned, Stephen, opening it up wider. So policy plus within the parameters of the internet through, in this case, it's ChatGPT. So in this case, it's a training scenario. Like there is many training scenarios. This is not unique. What makes it unique is going to be the feedback. So imagine that, I'll get you to play along with me. Imagine that you are a manager and you have to say no to holidays because you've already set the vacation policy. You have to say no. And you have somebody coming to you say, "Hey, I need to take time off over the holidays because I found a great deal. I just wasn't aware of it. I've booked it and I'll be away. Bye." So if you were the manager, how would you reply to this?
So I would reflect upon that person's need and empathize and show on my understanding of what their situation is, and then see if there's a way to work some kind of compromise which still addresses the policy, but and yet they're able to do this maybe at some future time, but working in partnership with that person, right? So.
So, what's the beauty about effective learning solutions is we're doing it as actual words. So, let's say that you say, "I understand you found a great deal. However, we have already finalized the vacations. Perhaps you can rebook." I don't think that's quite as empathetic as you put. But what's exciting is that it's actually, no matter what we put in, no matter what, it gives me that personalized feedback. In this case, it's saying to me that I'm clear and direct, which is important. However, I might want to show empathy, just like we had spoken about, towards your team members' disappointment. So it's telling me actually specific techniques and tips that I could have said instead. So it's fun that it actually goes at scale. And then we have a series of progressively harder situations that really are testing people. How would you show consistency to the policy while showing empathy and flexibility? And it's completely customized. So you could have 1,000 employees going through this training simulation of a difficult conversation, and each employee gets their own feedback that's specific to them.
Right, so it's more than a training simulation, though. It can be, I mean, it could actually take the place of the manager.
Yeah. Well, the future world, this level, I mentioned level one is doing what we're doing now, but faster. Level two is actually having, creating learning solutions where people are interacting with AI, which we can't do at scale. And then the level three is, yeah, it's, we've replaced the functional need that we currently think, when we think about corporate education, that's replaced. That's replaced with seamless integration of just-in-time tools when I need them. So there is no more training courses. That doesn't exist anymore.
Right, and that's going to come, right? In fact, if you look at the next iteration of the GPT technologies, and Microsoft, of course, is onboarding all of this, and they're the world's leader, the most valuable company, and they've really doubled down on the use of all of these and integrating it in a useful way. So, what you found in your research, though, is that nobody's doing what you've already created.
No,
Tier
this
two
doesn't
that you've
exist.
already created. You can scale this.
Yeah,
Right.
exactly. They, nobody's doing this right now.
But you're telling people about it so other people could do it.
They should. I'm encouraging. I write industry publications on this. I'm a frequent speaker at various conferences globally, industry publications. I'm encouraging everybody to do this. I have my AI plus learning development community of practice where I'm sharing this, sharing it. I want my goal is to elevate corporate education. So more people should come in. More people should be doing this.
Right. So it's like create a commons. You're sharing this. You want people to do this, right? Because you
Yeah.
think it's such a positive evolution of your industry, right? And it'll be very precise, very personalized, and it scales easily. And well, once you embody this into technology, then it scales, right? So, and the fact that you have automation, that's part of it as well. So, yeah, it's a natural. What's the reaction been as you talk about this?
So people are really excited. We have a number of prototypes right now with some various larger enterprises. And then, as is the case for where we are in this particular year, particular month in time, is there is always this governance structure, and not just within learning and development, governance of AI, but the broader. So the broader governance issues. So that becomes an interesting and a very interesting talking point. But what can be done, what can't be done within that each organization's policy.
Right, and then of course, making sure that you have the guardrails, and then also
Absolutely.
the risk mitigation narratives that are part of this, so that when people enter it, they understand that it is AI, or it is, and that there's it's not perfect, right? So you have to be willing to deal with some of the imperfections of it as well.
So it's an exciting time for the industry to really level up in what's possible, especially within an industry that has typically been a laggard. As I mentioned at the start of this, I've spent most of my career in marketing, mostly at Procter & Gamble. And there we had the privilege of pushing new technologies, pushing things forward. And I consistently see this 8-year gap from marketing into the field of corporate education, where things are very much lagging in terms of what's available from effective technology. So it'll be interesting as the technology continues to rapidly accelerate, what happens to some of these lagging industries as they slowly get underway, the openness as to what is possible.
Do you see yourself? I guess you don't see yourself replaced by the technology, but you see yourself enhanced in terms of your ability to deliver solutions faster, deliver solutions that are much more personalized, much more automated, much more precise to the specific targets, and you're willing to co-create with the technology to deliver these kinds of solutions. So some people in your position will be afraid, thinking they're going to be replaced, but I get the sense you're not.
No, I mean, I should be replaced. So I thought for maybe like 7, maybe it's 8 years that my role should be replaced. This shouldn't, what I was doing 8 years ago, that should be replaced. I should be replaced. I should be replaced. What's exciting is what I'm doing in the interim and what I'm doing with that. So why would I start my careers in learning development as an instructional designer and developer and coder? Like, why would I? No, I should be replaced. What's exciting is pushing and testing new to see what we can do to better have better performance outcomes. It's almost that level three I spoke about, where there isn't a trainer there anymore training you things. It's seamlessly integrated in. And what I can do as a learning and development professional to enable our industry to get there, that's my mission. So I hope I am replaced. And what I'm doing along the way and bringing this industry into something that's far more exciting, far more powerful in terms of the performance that it delivers amongst its human capital. That's the exciting part.
Yeah, and then measuring to ensure that there is this performance gap of advantage, of value add that you can measure and say, you know what, it's quicker, it's more precise, it's more personalized, and the reaction and the engagement is better, the retention is higher, and people are embracing this technology in a way that didn't occur when it was non-precise, so precise and personalized. So you can measure those things. And then I guess your role then becomes more strategy, in other words, when you embody it at the level three, where it's very seamless and integrated, then you can strategize as that growing across the industry and helping companies, corporates, and other large entities, or any entity for that matter, because then the cost will come down,
Yeah.
that even smaller businesses will be to incorporate this. But you can help guide them to into this adoption, and then the whole globe gets transformed, right?
Yes. And within that level three, it's a constant iteration of change and technology and making sure that as an industry, we're constantly driving the right performance outcomes. That's the exciting piece because we actually are finally at this place where we can suddenly drive better outcomes, like business outcomes, through corporate education than we have. If you think back about it, Stephen, think back how traditional corporate education has been for the past 100, 150 years. You've people sitting, somebody talking. Didn't we have that like in the 1800s? Like we had someone talking, people sitting. Like, has this not changed? The thing is, it has changed, but not every corporation's changed. And now with technology, we have the ability to finally do what we know has been, what is already scientifically proven to be effective. We now have the technological means to enable that. And also, as we're constantly bringing the cost down, even with this new technology now, to drive better performance than you would with someone just talking and people listening. We're finally there, and we're at this poise to be able to deliver this en masse.
Right, and when you have it in a digital environment, then you can actually measure that type of engagement that's occurring, right? And if people are willing to sign off on this in terms of this two-way communication, you can even see where you're learning, where your people are losing interest, and then you can insert again some more gamification elements to keep them engaged, and to keep them, you know, more embracing and also absorbing the material, because you could test to see as they're engaging with this in a digital way, you could see if they're absorbing the material as well.
Yeah, and it's even more than that. It's actually just designing from the start, so it's effective. So we're doing some measurement tests right now, comparing a traditional approach with these more modern approaches that I just shared with you. And it's all about, can people have better conversations? Like how are the customers saying in the NPS scores about these difficult conversations? Like what are the business outcomes? What's
Right.
our average call handle time now? How is this actually driving to the numerical value within our call center staff? So it's exciting that we have the technology and the measurement abilities to link this back to business outcomes. Because ultimately that's what it's all about.
Right. And then, as you indicated, I guess you could move also to the governance side, right? And provide, because you're so familiar with all elements of this, that you can help on the governance side together with strategizing as you go from tier one to tier two to tier three, or level one, two, or three, or as you go up in the capability maturity of this automation and this embodiment and integration. So that's interesting. It's a fascinating work. Do you want to give then some perspectives of trends that you're seeing out there that are not necessarily education related, but may impact on your space, let's say beyond AI machine learning? Are there other areas that you think are interesting to you?
What's interesting is there's a rapid yin and yang of upskilling. So on one side, you have a base of employees who are taking their careers into their own hands, as they've been told by their generations around them and above them, more specifically, of their parents and grandparents and such. And they're taking their upskilling into their own hands. And there's been a proliferation and adoption of motivated individuals to do things like Udemy courses or LinkedIn Learning courses or degreed courses. There's a plethora of different types of courses out there, even Khan Academy. These motivated individuals are taking that initiative because they see where they want to go and they see they need to control their own career. So we're seeing that, which is great. On the flip side, you're also seeing organizations trying to do this with their employee base as well. They're trying to upskill. There's a big trend for digital transformation amongst most enterprises. And what's interesting is that it's working in pockets, but it's working amongst those who are actually already motivated. who are already taking their career into their own hands, who are fantastic, fantastic employees to have at your company, and when they move to the next company, because they're not going to stay. These are the people that understand the currency of their skills and how it has a marketplace. So there's an interesting yin and yang of push and pull from organizations, which is the right thing to do. And I'm curious to see how it shakes out a bit, because what I have seen through early looks at many of the enterprises I'm working with is that, it hasn't achieved to the same mass levels as these enterprises wanted. That's not surprising, though, because the people are busy. So you only get those motivated people who, and typically there are certain cohorts that are able to take this extra time on their own time to be able to upskill. So I think those people are very well poised for this future world where it's the idea of upskilling, reskilling, or as Gina Genereau, she's a future of work and talent development expert, she calls pre-skilling. So it's organizations realizing that we need these skills amongst our future workforce to be able to handle the complexities that are coming through. What adjacent skills can we give them now? They need better empathy. They need to handle difficult conversations. Like, what can we feed them now that helps them adapt to what we think they're going to be in the future? And again, I think it's this cohort of motivated people that will really be able to shine as time unfolds.
You study business and you study commerce, and when you talk org behavior, there's a lot of research in this area, or at least there's a lot of published work, whether I don't know how grounded it is sometimes, but published work indicating that there's people who will take this sort of proactive approach, and that's sort of ingrained in them, and it's not a large percentage. And then the others, they you have to somehow embody that into their mindset somehow. Yeah, incentivize it. And that's a challenge. And how do you address that challenge, right? Bridging gap. So
So this is a concept of a learning culture, which has been prevalent in many organizations as something to strive for the past 40 years. They're striving for this learning culture where their organizations are providing the tools for employees, workers to be able to learn these skills on their own. But what we're seeing consistently is that people aren't. They still are expecting to be told, you need to take this training on difficult conversations. You need to take this training on how to deal with executives in a meeting that you're going to be uncomfortable with. They're still in this old mindset that I had alluded to, but from the 1850s, where people are used to being in a classroom and being told it's a complete waste of time, complete waste of time. It's not effective. But people are in the mentality because the ecosystem around them, this learning culture, does not exist. Organizations have strived and they've done wonderful to try and incentivize it. It's not quite happening. I don't know that we'll get there in the way we've been trying for the past 40 years. I think we'll just achieve it through automation where people, instead of being told how to use a system training, we do a lot of systems training right now and took in taking e-learning on a system training, go to a class on systems training. This is very common nowadays. Instead, what's happening as well is, or what will be more so, is different digital adoption platforms. You don't need to learn how to use a system. It's all there. It's so intuitive. And when you're not sure, automatically it should come up. Need help? Click this, and it'll show you what to do next. So right there, I've eliminated the need for an employee to raise their hand and say, I'm motivated to search my learning management system and how to use this tool. I don't know that we'll achieve the learning culture in the way that organizations want, at least in the near term. Still a good fight to have, still a good fight to have, but it's been a long fight.
Yeah, and I guess with personalized avatars, and that'll be reality and embodiment of this AI into robots, and that robot will be a companion. So in a seamless way, as you're dialoguing with it, then it could be moving the needle forward, right? So and because you can program this into the system, it kind of reminds me of Patty Mays and her work at MIT Media Labs, where they find that if you embody an avatar with some known notable figure, then there's a higher degree of adoption and learning and retention, or something that's sort of optimistic. I did an interview with her and her team, and they're working on this. How can we move the needle forward without the person knowing that the,
Yes.
and it's for their good, right? So.
And this directly correlates to what I said when I hope that in this future world I don't have a job. The role of trainer isn't there. It's replaced with that seamless integration. So whether it is that digital avatar that's providing you those nudges you need, there's no training there anymore. It's already seamlessly fed to you in a way that's just in time, just as you need it, without any formalities of training anymore.
Right. You don't even think of it as training. You just think of it as just your normal sort of span of life. It's like people grabbing their phones when they want to do something. It's just an extension of who they are today, right? So.
And organizations see this on their employment engagement scores somewhat because there is a lot of work being done to help drive just-in-time solutions that drive performance, so performance support. In the past, that would have been training. And this dichotomy from the employee engagement scores, employers are saying, well, I don't get any training. Company's not investing in me. I'm not getting any training. When what they don't realize is, no, there's been a ton of learning that's happening. There's a ton of performance support that's happening. Yeah, we're not doing training because you're not, if I teach you how to work a system in a classroom, it's irrelevant. You're not going to use it or remember it. Instead, let's adopt different tools that help you drive the same performance outcomes in a more seamless way. So that's that interesting dichotomy. And going back to the challenges of a learning culture that we're slowly chipping away at, we'll slowly get there.
So in the future of work, then, do you foresee, let's say within 10 years, that a lot of positions will be automated and people's roles will shift, and what that job will look like in many professions? So that's kind of one area. In fact, I did an interview earlier today with a top computer scientist who has worked in so many different disciplines as a top computer scientist, and he's an AI expert. But he's also for decades has been working in the legal area, and he even suggested decades ago that AI will impact the legal area. And when he first came out with these ideas, people thought, no, that'll never happen. But really, you could have AI really seriously augment in the legal profession, right? And potentially, it could replace many of the functions that occur in the legal profession. But that's true of many, many professions. And it used to be this idea that sort of the white collar jobs were not, you couldn't replace them. But now there's a realization that it's any kind of job could be potentially augmented anyways, or enhanced in some ways. So I don't want to use the word replace, but enhanced in some way. So what do you then see as the future of work? What is that going to look like? And I would say in under 5 years, what is that going to?
So this reminds me of a conversation one of my direct reports came to me when we were embarking on our AI community practice a few years ago with AI and learning development community practice. She's like, I was talking with some industry colleagues, Danielle, they say that AI is going to replace my job. God, like, Danielle, what is this true? I'm like, Zanelle, AI is not going to replace her job. You're going to replace their job because you know how to use AI in our profession. You're replacing it. So what this correlates to, not just within our this that role, but within many roles, it becomes the skills to be able to co-create with AI effectively, and then undermining that so critically, therefore, becomes the non-AI skills, the empathy, the human connection, the collaboration. Which is interesting because those are some of the things that we're missing when you look at the future generation. And this is the skills you learn in the playground, right? These are skills to interact with other people you learn when you're quite young. And those become the really essential human skills that within any industry then, as things become more automated, and as you yourself have the skills to co-create with AI, what becomes your distinguishing feature then is those interpersonal skills. Are the skills you need to drive decisions forward.
But ultimately, because I work in foresight, foresight being like a futurist, sort of seeing where things are going and then speaking about it and trying to mitigate the risks that are associated with it, then that seamless integration that we already talked about be so seamless that really AI will be so integral to everything we do, and it can make its own decisions and so on. So, and then how do we interact with that? So that's a work in progress, and what that it's going to look like. And so I envision a future that will be so different that we it'll be hard to imagine, other than maybe some really esoteric kind of science fiction that people are encompassing. Do you think of that way? Do you think it's going to be that way? But I'm not talking 100 years from now. I'm talking 10 years from now. No.
Yeah, I think we can't imagine right now what the tactileness is of the next 3 years, like what that means on every worker's everyday basis. I don't think people can actually grasp until they're right at it or it's already past them, and they realize, oh, now I finally get what you're mentioning. So within that, along the way, hopefully people have time to be able to make those transitions. And then through it all, it becomes this underlying skill that one that always also keeps coming up for a long time now. From a skill standpoint, is critical thinking. This consistently has been a gap for like 9 years. People are constantly mentioning critical skills as our gap, especially amongst our future generation. Now that need to be able to critically think becomes even more so within the realm of over-reliance potentially on other artificial means. So I think the workplace is going to be an exciting place.
It's definitely one that's going to be full of opportunities and transformation. And it's really incumbent on us to look at it as an opportunity, but you have to embrace it. So, and keep up with it. You can't be snowballed by it. So, this is the last question. What recommendations would you like to give to the audience?
I would say to keep this internal drive to keep learning. So the research has shown, and plus I see it in my industry of learning and development, that those who continually learn, continually are curious, continually investing that time are the ones that are able to make their mark on the world to help others, whomever that might be. It's transcending more from that motivated cohort that I mentioned to doing that for their own knowledge, self skills. Phenomenal. That's phenomenal in terms of being able to achieve their goals. But it translates more, this lifelong learning. It allows you to impact other people, to shape your businesses, to shape your companies, to shape your teams, to shape your families. It becomes this great underpinning that then we can help really improve society.
Well, you're definitely doing that. You've embraced this personal journey of lifelong learning, and then of course you're systemizing it in some ways, right? Because you're training corporates to take and embrace lifelong learning, and that is this founder and chief learning strategist of Beyond the Sky, which is this entity you created to do custom corporate training to global organizations, and you speak on it as an industry expert. Within learning development, you contribute your insights to these top conferences, publications. You have your AI plus learning development community of practice, which I think is really interesting. And you have your own podcast series. That's you in 2020, 2042, the future work. So I think that's so far ahead that it'd be hard to imagine what that's going to look like. So thank you for sharing so many of your insights. You are definitely transforming the industry. You shared and you made available, so like open source, this next level two, a way of delivering, and you're already thinking about this level three or tier three way of what it's going to look like, and you're part of that entire journey. So, thank you for coming in and sharing so much with our audience.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited what the next few years will bring. It's great times. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.